And now, a progress report from the front lines of the troop surge in Iraq. Earlier this year, the Bush administration deployed an extra 30,000 troops in an effort to quell sectarian violence and create space for national reconciliation. Is it working? By at least one measure, the answer is yes. Some of the heavily patrolled neighborhoods are relatively peaceful. Iraqi civilian deaths are down. So are U.S. troop casualties. But the progress may come at a price. Part of the U.S. counterinsurgency strategy involves arming and working closely with former militants. They're fighting alongside U.S. forces today, but will they be tomorrow? And are they interested in national reconciliation or in settling old scores? Journalist John Lee Anderson raises those and other questions in a piece in the current New Yorker entitled Inside the Surge, and he's our guest for the rest of this hour. We want to hear from listeners who've served in Iraq. If you've been a part of the surge, give us a call. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. Our email address is talk@npr.org. And you can also comment on our blog. It's at npr.org/blogofthenation. And joining us on the line from Campeche, Mexico, is John Lee Anderson. He's a staff writer for The New Yorker. And John Lee, welcome.
Thank you very much.
It's good to have you. Appreciated your piece in The New Yorker. And first of all, before I go into some of the specifics of that piece, give us a snapshot. You were in Iraq relatively recently to report this piece, and you compared conditions on the ground with what you experienced 10 months before. What did you find?
Well, 10 months ago, around this time, in fact, last year, I was in Baghdad. There were mass kidnappings that took place in broad daylight within a kilometer or two of the Green Zone, where the U.S. Command is based and the Iraqi government, and nobody stopped them. These things happened. They seemed uncontrollable. There was widespread resentment amongst the Iraqis that I knew and met on the outside of the Green Zone towards what they saw as an increasingly buffered and inept U.S. military command and Iraqi government. They said they're protected, they're fine, they're inside there, and we're left to the wolves out here. The U.S. incredibly seemed incapable of stopping. In one case, I remember, it was a kidnapping that involved 50 vehicles that crossed central Baghdad and emptied out the occupants of a ministry and then took them hostage at about 2 in the afternoon. This time, Baghdad's different. It's still a terrible place. You can see it on people's faces. They look like they haven't slept for years, you know, the deep circles under their eyes. People are very tense. They've been through a hell of a lot. But in the places where the U.S. put in its surge troops, which were some of the worst neighborhoods in Baghdad, there is a kind of calm, an uneasy peace, if you will. But nonetheless, the killing is down. The walls are up. There are troops in place raiding. It's the difference between, I think, in those sort of no-go neighborhoods we used to have in bad parts of American cities, when the cops didn't get out of their cars. They just rove through, and you had sort of crack dealers on the streets with Uzi submachine guns. I remember that from parts of New York in the 80s. Mm-hmm. The difference between that and actually having beat cops on the street that know the names and the stories of the occupants of the houses in the area that have been assigned to.
Now, in your piece, you write about a particular neighborhood where you spent some time, the neighborhood of Ghazaliyah, a Sunni neighborhood that borders the eastern edge of Anbar province and the center of what was the Sunni insurgency. And you follow the progress of what's called a joint security station there, set up by American forces as part of this surge. Can you tell us how these joint security stations work?
Well, that's right. The idea was to move the Americans out of their large bases where they were doing patrols and basically engaging in combat when they went through these neighborhoods, very often getting hit by IEDs, these explosive devices and so on, and moving them into the neighborhoods. In Ghazaliyah, which borders a Shiite district to the north, you had both al-Qaeda, basically, in charge in the southern part of the district, and sectarian cleansing. The Jaish al-Mahdi militia of Muqtada al-Sadr, the radical Shiite militia, moving in from the north. It was out of control. These JSSs, as they're called, joint security stations, are essentially requisitioned houses where surrounded by walls and blast walls, where the Americans are living, say, 100, a company of Americans, sometimes more, living with and Iraqis, usually 4 or 5 times as many Iraqis, either army or police. And together, they are getting to know their neighborhoods. They're patrolling many hours every day. They're doing biometric profiles of all the military-age males in their areas, which are interlocking. They have a series of interlocking walls, so they've established both outer and internal perimeters. The idea being that in the future, anybody from the outside who is met at an inspection barricaded checkpoint will be immediately identified as an outsider, thus giving the neighborhood more protection. The other phenomena that's occurred is that the local, many local Sunni men, youths and men, have joined what they call the Ghazaliya Guardians, which are essentially a kind of paramilitary organization, and they are being fast-tracked by the Americans to become the police in their areas. The logic being, if they empower the locals to protect their families, they will have an incentive not to attack the Americans.
I see. And this is the troubling part of your piece, because these Ghazaliya Guardians, I'd like you to say a little more about that, because from what you write, some of these people were former militants, and you suggest that we're not exactly clear of their motives. They're fighting alongside U.S. forces right now, but will they be down the road? I mean, this is sort of an uneasy partnership, isn't it?
Well, this is true. Now, the Colonel Burton, who was the head of the brigade, which controls most of western and northwestern Baghdad, told me that he thought the key to sustainability of the surge was precisely the volunteer organizations, and he openly admitted that in some cases it included men who had fired bullets against Americans. But he said that he felt that the so-called Sunni awakening, whereby large numbers of Sunnis, beginning with the tribes in Anbar and then spreading into Baghdad and elsewhere, to decide to turn their guns against their former partners, al-Qaeda and the more radical Sunni extremists, and side with the Americans, was the only way forward. Now, I talked with some of the Guardians, and I found them a mixed bag. You know, they're there for both income and ostensibly out of patriotic spirit, but I remember one conversation in particular with a young man, and I quoted to him something a Sunni tribal leader in Amman told me, which was that now that we've cleaned up Anbar, we will go after the Shiites in Baghdad, and you know the Americans essentially, he said, were useful fools for us, and I paraphrased this for this young Ghazaliya Guardian, and I said, so what do you think about that? He was noncommittal, but when I said, what about the idea of, you know, cleaning out the Shiites from government, the militias and so on, he said he thought that was a good idea. There is a sense, there is a kind of troubling sense that we don't know everything that may come out of this, and certainly the Shiites I spoke to, some, in some cases people I've known for a number of years now, are very worried about it, both inside and outside of government. They think that the Sunnis have essentially made a tactical decision to align themselves with the Americans as the discourse out of the White House becomes increasingly anti-Iranian, i.e. fielding militias against the Americans in Iraq, and that the Sunnis will use their alliance with the Americans
to eventually
attack them.
You quote one of these people, if I'm recalling correctly, who told you, we're getting Anbar under Anbar province under control, and then Baghdad is next.
That's right. He said, we'll purge Baghdad.
That's troubling. We're talking to John Lee Anderson, staff writer at The New Yorker magazine, about his article in the current edition called Inside the Surge. And we're asking you, if you've served in Iraq, to give us a call at 800-989-8255. And let's go to a caller from Minnesota, Viva Lance. Am I pronouncing your name correctly?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can.
Yeah, I called in to originally talk about something else. But when he mentioned that he was in Ghazaliya, or he talked to soldiers in Ghazaliya, I was at the Camp Red Falcon, which was, I was in the 82nd Airborne during the initial part of the war, and I was there in 03 and 04. But there's a creek that separates the Shula and Ghazaliya, and Ghazaliya is the Shia neighborhood to the north, or the city to the north, and then Ghazaliya is right next to it. And we found my platoon found so many bodies in the creek that separated the city, and there's a lot of hate between the Sunni and Shia, in those two cities. And I just don't see how we're going to change things in a few years when these people have hatreds from centuries.
Hmm.
You know, we had ICD soldiers, which are like the Iraqi National Guard. We trained and got them ready. And we ended up, you know, raiding different areas in Ghazalia, and we found their names. We found a lot of pictures with them, with people they preyed on in the neighborhoods next to them. You know, and I just don't see how these people have hatred that's, you know, so ingrained in them that...
Yeah, you're not sure exactly. You're not sure how they could ever sort of reconcile. What do you think, John Lee Anderson?
I mean, he makes an interesting point, and it's very true what he says. But you know, I point out, in addition to that creek, which that's sort of an irrigation ditch, a kind of canal. There's now a wall as well, in order to prevent the sort of back and forth attacks that were going on. And in the earlier this year, a kind of push by the Shiite militia based in Shula to come in and essentially clear out the Sunnis from northern Ghazalia. You know, you also had a situation where the Iraqi police force that was there before, you know, was also involved in the ethnic killing. And in fact, the last police commander, Shiite, is under arrest for allegedly being involved in many kidnappings and killings. So, it's not even that the volunteers in this case who are Sunnis that the Americans are siding with are somewhat suspect. In a part of Ghazalia I was with, the Americans were still working with Iraqi police who had been confined to base and were nonetheless suspected of having been involved in sectarian killings. So I think I've been saying ethnic. Sorry for the slip.
Sure.
But
John Lee Anderson, hold on just one second, because I want to inform our listeners that you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And we're talking to John Lee Anderson, a writer with the New Yorker magazine, about his article Inside the Surge. I want to ask you, John Lee Anderson, if the U.S. military officers that you spoke to are aware of this sort of potential deal with the devil that they've made. I mean, do they realize that this could backfire, that there could be blowback from this, or do they see this as all good?
Well, it's never black or white. You know, I think the colonel who's set up about 30, the Colonel Burton, whom I mentioned before, who's set up 34 of these JSSs in different parts of Baghdad, is attempting to look on the bright side, in the sense that, you know, he has seen the body count go down. He's seen men who were formerly leading extremist groups to attack daily American soldiers no longer doing so. I think they're aware that they have some loose cannons and some wild cards in their hand, and I think they're trying very hard to figure out how to deal with that. It's not a perfect situation, and I don't think they believe it is either, whatever public spin they're putting on it. A lot of, you know, for this to come out at all well, or less badly than it might, there needs to be, and there are already strenuous efforts at trying being brokered by the Americans to get the two sides together, to get the Shiite government to relent somewhat, to bring in more Sunnis into the security forces. This has been a problem, and the volunteers, the Americans see as something of a solution to that. But it's something of an American fait accompli. And it reflects the nature of the American presence in Iraq, which to a large extent is still coercive.
Right. And speaking of the Shiite-dominated government, what do Iraqi government officials think of these suspect volunteers?
Well, they're very worried about them.
Yeah.
They've been dragging their feet about incorporating them into the police forces, but they have relented somewhat because the United States brings a lot of clout to bear, and it is also true that officials and departments and ministries of the Shiite-led coalition government in Iraq was also involved in sectarian killings, and they've had there's a series of scandals, some that have erupted and some probably yet to erupt, which have implicated them. So it's a constant negotiated, it's in constant negotiation, and to a certain extent, I see this phenomenon of the volunteers as a kind of U.S.-led effort to force reconciliation on the Shiite-led government.
Mm. You quote a U.S. Army colonel who says, we're in a window that's very narrow, and we have some important decisions to make. Which way Iraq goes will depend on what we do. Is there a sense that this window is closing before sufficient progress is being made? What's your feeling from what you saw over there?
Many of them are worried, as they say, the buzzword is sustainability. They're worried about the fact that, you know, this has been assisted by a number of factors, chief amongst them in terms of settling bad neighborhoods in Baghdad, the surge in U.S. troops. But, of course, President Bush has committed to withdrawing nearly as many by next summer. There doesn't appear to be any more that can be sent because the U.S. military is so stretched. So they do worry about being able to do the kind of hearts and minds follow-up on the stabilization they've secured in the coming weeks and months in order to leave these places secure. But to a large extent, they're depending on local proxies and their purported goodwill to take over once they've gone. And that's, I think, where we may see areas that are a bit quicksandy, if you know what I mean.
Yes. Well, John,
there's an element of unknowability to
right. Them. And on that question of unknowability, we're going to say goodbye. And thank you, John Lee Anderson.
Thank you.
John Lee Anderson, talking to us from Campeche, Mexico. He's a staff writer for The New Yorker, and his article, The Surge, appears in the latest issue. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Anthony Brooks in Washington.